Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode to that once a week. I've been pretty consistent this year. Thank you for all those who've been following me and really been keeping up on the podcast. Thank you to Combat Press, who's also going to start putting my podcast up. I want to thank all the people who've been listening and following me for years. I'm great to be a part of any platform that gets kickboxing out there more. So thank you very much. Adding on to this, I want to thank anybody who's ever participated or had anything to do with the growth of the kickboxing sport. It's just, I do love it, and I'm glad that people take the time and listen. One other way to listen to the podcast is, of course, in the iTunes search engine. It's the preferred way, I think, of listening to the podcast. It's the most efficient way. It'll upload to you, you know, automatically because it's iTunes. And of course, you know, go there, rate me, get me acknowledgement as far as getting the podcast out there, because I really do want more and more people to fall in love with kickboxing the way I fell in love with kickboxing. So short show for you today, but I wanted to stay with my streak. I'm going to be consistent. I got an episode for you today. I've got another episode for you on Thursday because we've got Glory going down this weekend. I'm grateful for every listener, grateful for everybody's been following kickboxing, and I want to show the appreciation by being consistent. So really, I'm just going to go ahead and play with a couple things. I'm going to go into, I think I'm going to go ahead and start with some news and notes. I'm going to go back to my series, my Legend series that I was doing before, and then I think I'll end it with, you know, something a little bit different, maybe a story from my combat sports past or something like that or whatever. But anyways, let's go ahead and get to the point. The first thing I want to talk about, Glory announces the rest of their 2017 schedule. This is good because the first thing I see, of course, we've got, we're in Belgium, then we're in Denmark, then we're in Netherlands, then we're in France. Why is that important to me? Because it's Europe. It's Europe. We got to get more shows in Europe. I think kickboxing is still really, really hot in Europe. I do want them to get in the habit of focusing more just on doing cards. I don't necessarily need a tournament for everything. If we had a K1 World Grand Prix, a tournament makes more sense to me because it leads to one show to end them all, if you will. You know, like one show, one big show that's going to tell you where everything stands. So I like little tournaments that feed that big tournament. When you have a bunch of little tournaments that just feed for your next title contender, I think that's a little bit different, a little bit more difficult to sell. Storytelling is part of this, and I think that Glory is, first of all, they're killing it with their shows. Like, they switched the business model up. They had the one hiccup with the Last Man Standing pay-per-view. But since that pay-per-view, they've been picking up the consistency every year. They found their home. They found a TV channel partner. I've been watching the fights in ESPN3. That's real big. I've also, been on Fight Pass because I was already on Fight Pass before because of the fights. That's huge. You know, that's big for me to have the opportunity to watch kickboxing that much. And I do think that Glory's doing a great job in that resolve. I do think that the storytelling does struggle a little bit whenever you're not consistent with how you do your tournaments. For example, we don't know how the tournaments feed into the heavyweight division right now because we had, it seems like we've got three viable contenders. Adekbuyi makes sense as a contender. Ben Zadig gets a win over Ishmael Lant, and Ishmael Lant was a previous contender. He was a previous contender. He won a four-man tournament, then won like a singles match, and then he ended up losing. So it's like, because he was sitting around waiting for his title shot, he ended up losing his title shot. So it's like, what are the tournaments meaning if they don't feed into the system the way that we were saying? If they don't feed into, this is the big tourney, if they don't feed into, this is where things are going. And I've mentioned it before, the reason why I like the tournament, the K1 World Grand Prix tourney, is number one, I thought it was an exclusive thing to kickboxing. It was something that we had that the rest of the world didn't. And then in December, I felt like we had a Super Bowl, an event that if you didn't pay attention to us all year, you pay attention to us in that event. So I do like the idea of us getting back to that model if we're going to play with tournaments, because the storyline with that would go, all right, let's say we got 12 shows, okay? Let's see if we did the 12 shows. if we organize it a little bit different, I'm going to go ahead and play. This is what I was saying. I was going to do something a little bit different. I'm going to go ahead and play with, all right, this is a different way of looking at how you could possibly organize Glory in a way to have big tournaments at the end of the year, all right? So our big tournaments for every weight class. So you're pretty much doing an event every year or every month. So that's 12 in a year. So that's really, really good. Easy to build from that. K1 did it with less. So you got, you know, you several weight classes. I mean, you'll have to revisit some of them. I can see they're trying to do something with featherweight. I'm finally seeing some new names there. But let's go ahead and just use the top. Let's just use the top ones for right now. Okay, we're going to use their 77 kgs. I guess we'll use their welterweight, their middleweight, their light heavy, and their heavy. So we'll just use those fours. Okay, so we could use one of the events to sell, or two different events to have eight fighters, so that would be a total of 16, and then those guys can go into your tournament field. Now, you've already got guys who are already ranked, have been doing it for a while, whatever, but let's just say, hypothetically, let's just go into it. We'll just go ahead and play with numbers, all right? So it's a total of 16, you know, or even easier, I could just go 32 down, but let's just start, let's just go with 16 guys, all right? So you've got two tournaments. The winner of those, you know, of course, will bring you down to eight. You've got eight fighters. You've already got eight consistent guys who've been doing it for a while. There's, you know, you can go ahead and just choose your top eight, separate them, let them just do single fights throughout the year, maybe two times a year. Let them do single fights. And then all of a sudden, after those guys do the single fights, you've got your new eight. So you just introduced two new stars that nobody's known before, that they've been able to work their way through these tournaments or whatever. We'll say, I'll go ahead and bracket it and say the whole tournament isn't done the one night. Let's just say the tournament begins on those dates. So that'll be a little bit easier for you guys to follow. So what basically what I'm saying is we've got an 8-man card and an 8-man card. Or excuse me, 16 and a 16. And then those eight winners then move on and go into what would be your elimination. So what I'm talking about is two events feed into one event. And then the elimination winners will then go to, like, you don't even have to have that'll be a 16-man because you've got eight already. And then another eight. And then your final night is another eight. That would be four events would do one weight class for a whole year. Like, a way for people to follow it, for them to get to know the athletes, for them to get behind them. That's how I would set that up in my personal opinion. I think that's a way that you could do it. If you've got this many shows, I would almost all, I mean, you can mix the shows up, but go ahead, have your single fights here and there. I've got no problems with them. And really, one thing that Glory has been winning on, I think that the Fight Pass cards have been good for the most part. The American Fight Pass cards, they've got to serve a purpose, of course, for the local audience. But I really think that they've done a great job with the international Fight Pass cards. And I've given Glory credit so much on, you know, this Belgium card is solid, but last year's Paris card, you know, our Nice, that card, I remember that was pretty good. The Germany card, of course, they've been doing great cards. They've been doing a great job with the Fight Pass portion of it. So this isn't a bashing thing. This is, when people are listening to me, I want them to understand my breakdown of the Glory schedule. It's not done in a way where I'm saying, okay, Glory's, you know, doing everything wrong. No, this is just another way of looking at how I think that we could help the growth of kickboxing and then keep one of the staples of kickboxing, which is, of course, our tournament. So I'll go ahead and explain it full, revisit it, step outside of it, do my best to explain this in a clear way if I was at all confusing before. I think with four events for a weight class, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. And again, you could do two weight classes in one of those events. You could have, you know, because eight fights isn't going to fill a card. So you could go eight and go 16 fights and then do two weight classes. All right. So now I'm playing with it now. I'm having fun. Sorry. Forgive me if I'm ran, but I'm having fun with it. So let's say you got a 16 fight card. Okay. You're going to just do two weight classes for the fight card. So I'm going to go ahead and say we're going to do light heavyweight and featherweight. We need stars for both, all right? So on two different events, let's say January and May, those are the days that we focus on those weight classes, okay? So we're going to go ahead and I should be selling this. But anyways, we're going to go ahead and have fun with it. On those dates, I've got 8 new featherweights are featherweights that people know in the world for the bottom, for one half of the card or every other. And I've got 8 205-ish are light heavyweight guys, 209. I think they're around 209, 208 for Glory. I'm going to have 8 guys there, all right? Guys that, you know, who are just going to go in, fill spots, you know, tournament guys. If I want to use my old guys, I can. But mainly I'm going to try to leave those guys fresh for just super fights or whatever. So those guys are going to go ahead and compete. And then all of a sudden, when I'm done with that card, I'm going to have a select group from both. So I'm going to get, you know, 4 to emerge from both weight classes. And then I'm going to do that event again in May. Now I have 4 to emerge from both weight classes. And then I'm going to have an elimination. And in the elimination, it's when I have the old fighters go against the new fighters. So, you know, so guys who are in the Glory top 8, guys, you know, your Daniel Youngos, your Dudes, you know, guys who've been in Glory for a while. Maybe they get buys. And I'll have them compete. And then I'll have them all go towards a big tournament towards the end of the year. That is another way of looking at how you could do this with the tournament field. Because when I had Glory, when I had K1 back in the day, I'd say one of K1's better years, I'd say around 2000, 2001, you just look at some of those tournaments and you had your regional tournament and you had a Alexan Ignashov, let's say he wins some Belarus. He then earns a spot on your European Grand Prix. You win your European Grand Prix, all of a sudden, all right, so that's win 3 fights here, win 3 fights here. That's 6 fights and 2 events. That sells me on who you are as a fighter. I don't know who you are. 6 fights and 2 events, all of a sudden I'm starting to see who you – you're starting to emerge as somebody for me to pay attention to. Then you get the elimination. That's 1 fight, but that's, again, another opportunity to see. So now that is your 7th fight in a year and your 3rd event. So I'm getting to recognize you. I'm getting to see you. And then you get your how well do you do in the Grand Prix against the best guys in the world, whether you win it or whether you go to the semis or you just have a good performance or lose in the first round or you get blown out in the first round. At least I got to follow you and you could say, hey, you know, maybe this guy's going to be something down the road. Maybe this guy's going to show me some skill. But I get a map of where we're going. And that's kind of what tournaments are about. Tournaments to me are maps. That's what they are. Now, of course, there are people who are going to have the other argument. Sometimes you don't. The best fighter doesn't always win the tournaments. And my problem with that is always going to be sometimes the best fighter doesn't always win in a single fight. It's about who executes on fight night. That's just, for me, that's how it is. That's how it should be. That's how it always will be. That's just my personal opinion. Everybody's different there, but that's how I feel about that. So if I were to look at it, moving forward, I really, truly believe that Glory putting on events regular is the foundation to build on. It's already a winning formula to get eyes because people are now seeing it. All we got to do is start to push a little bit more. The stars are starting to be a little bit more familiar. You're starting to see guys like Nicky Holtzkin and Dumbe. You're starting to see them pop up in MMA outlets. And how many people knew about the Rico Verhoeven fight? Clearly, it wasn't the end that we all desired. But, you know, it had buzz and people were interested. And so those things are good. So when I see that Glory puts together their event schedule through July, that's a win for me. Now, K1 back in the day, they used to give me their schedule for the whole year. But that was still like 6 events. You know, we've already got 2 down and we're going into 1 in a couple weeks. And I'm looking at 5 in front of me. So they're pretty much giving me the schedule for the next 7. That's a win for me. You know, that is a win for me as a combat sports fan to see that K1, you know, what they've done with schedule before, I'm seeing it here and I'm actually seeing more of it. The question for me now is, how do I keep up with these athletes? How do I follow them on a regular basis? Because now that the brand is starting to be regular, I need to start seeing some of the athletes. And I need to know something about the athletes. And there is attempts being made there. You know, it's definitely, for me, it's important because I really feel that these tournaments, regular shows and going to different parts of the world, not going to deal whatever. It's only the start, because if we don't know who the athletes are, we're just not going to fall in love with it the same way. They're the ones that carry the sport, because kickboxing is a great product. The product has never failed. We've got to have the athlete shown. People got to know who Rico Verhoeven is. And if these guys are going to mixed martial arts and doing all these other kind of things, whatever, it's an opportunity for us to get more eyes on it. But in the end, Robin van Roosmalen is completely content doing both. He likes competing in both weight classes. He likes the idea that he's the pound-for-pound best. And people need to see this guy. He's all action. He is not – and Robin van Roosmalen, I can't think of a bad Robin van Roosmalen fight. He brings it. So this guy's got to be known to the whole combat sports world. This guy's fighting, sent down and watch him. That's what's got to happen. You know, Enrico Gogokia has now moved on to boxing. But I remember I used to always tweet whenever he was fighting, stop what you're doing, go watch this guy. You know what I'm saying? Because he's amazing. Elise Blade, those guys, Masaki Nori, those guys are amazing. So Glory, you know, I just mentioned, you know, just random fighters in the world. Glory, with their brand, they've got some entertaining guys. We got to see more of those guys. And then, of course, Glory, they're starting it already. If they're going to keep the featherweight weight class, they got to invest into it heavy, because right now it is not must-see TV. We don't know the names. They just lost the name. It's Bellator kickboxing is a, you know, and again, it's not – Bellator kickboxing isn't what I wanted it to be, you know, but they seem like they're paying guys. So when Gabriel Varga decided that he was going to move over there and pursue it, and of course that leads to the possible him and Kevin Ross fighting down the road, that's going to be awesome. But really, we need more guys competing on a high level. Regular enough for the audience to follow who they are. Going to go ahead and move on from that and say that UFC is now adding K1 fights to their library. There is a problem with this, of course. You know, K1 Global has – it seems like there's too many people that have rights to K1. So despite the fact that these K1 shows are on Fight Pass, that they're starting to get fights on Fight Pass, that's good. If you've got Fight Pass, go ahead, watch some of the greats. I saw a clip that had, you know, Mark Hunt and, you know, when his knockout over Jerome LeBanner. If you want to do that, that's good. You know, go check out the sport. Go get behind it. That's huge. I definitely appreciate that. All of us combat sports fans appreciate that you're getting behind the sport. But they're on YouTube. You know, the same fights are on YouTube because so many people have rights to them. The fights are old. They've been floating out there. Now, of course, you know, I'm assuming that someone's going to go out there and try to take them down. But that person's got to come out with the only claim to them. And I do not believe that anyone has singular claim to them. No, I don't see that at all. I truly, truly believe that K1, the actual ownership of its library and so on, is up to debate. So enjoy them while they're on YouTube and enjoy them while they're on Fight Pass. I'm looking at the card over and over. I'm going to save it for this weekend. It's got some interesting stuff for Glory. We'll definitely break that down coming up this Thursday. I'm looking at the card now. I'm like, nah, I'm going to go ahead and save it. Wait till we get a little bit further down the road. Other than that, Super Combat, they talked about there. Actually, as we speak, I should be watching the stream, but I needed to get this podcast up. They're actually doing a show now. So when by the time you get a hold of this, their show should be done. So definitely check out Super Combat. They've got streams that are now readily available. You can go do, you know, even after the stream's dead, I wouldn't be surprised if you can go still watch it. I like that they've been consistent as a kickboxing show for as long as they have, but they too need to develop stars that all of us recognize on a regular basis because their older stars are walking away from the sport. I am going to go ahead and move on to my Legend series. Like I said, I want to really focus on just a few things today, nothing crazy. I just wanted to get an episode to you. I want to talk about what makes Rob Kamen great. So first and foremost, Rob Kamen is one of the first superstars from the Origins era, if you will. Of course, you guys all know the story. Guys like Jan Plaas and Tom Harnink developed, you know, what became Dutch-style kickboxing. Harnink, of course, his story is he took a team down to Thailand, and they, you know, they kind of did waist-high karate, and he said they all got beat up. And then once they got beat up, he decided to stay, picked up on the low kick, picked up on the boxing. Jan Plaas similar. Also, their trips to Japan with Sadakan, I'm pronouncing it wrong because I've got something stuck in my mouth. But it developed from a Japanese style of what, you know, became kickboxing there, and then the, you know, the blend of the Thai kicks and the success that they were having with the Thais in Thailand. This idea that the boxing leads to the kicks. You know, that's where they have the best success, because, you know, they can't play power body kicks with the Thais. They'll lose every time. They can't play tap rhythm. They can't play clinch with the Thais until they learned and got better at it. When I did the kickboxing documentary, you heard Rob Kamen saying that he always believes that fighting is still about, you know, full rules Muay Thai. He says it's about the game with the Thais. But he said that Dutch kickboxing, known throughout the world, but really what it is the combination of the kicks. So it's not that there aren't other styles, because I'd be the first one to say it. There are other styles that are having a lot of success in Holland right now. You know, I'd say Lucien Corbin's got his own style, and the Moroccan-based fighters has got like a rougher style, doesn't have the clean combo to low kick flow. Now, all of them do, you know, like a Ilias Blade, of course, has the kickboxing style. Oskin has the kickboxing style. Muhammad Raya, they have the kickboxing style that we're used to. But Big Mo, he's slugging, you know what I'm saying? He's throwing that heat. So guys are a little bit different. Not everybody's playing it the same. And they're all working. They're all getting people's hands raised. Sometimes not as clean as you like. Sometimes it's more aggressive. Sometimes they fall into the clinch more than you like. But it's pretty good. When they give themselves space to land the offense, there's a lot of different styles having success. We go to the origins. Rob Kamen is one of the first major names to emerge. Raymond Dekker is still another 10 years away, you know what I'm saying, before we get into what he did in the 90s, late 80s, by the time Rob starts to have his first fight. So of the greats that you know, I'd say one of the first major international names to come, I'll go ahead and credit Rob Kamen. I'd say he's the first big-time international kickboxer out of Holland. I mean, there, Lucien Corbin, of course, was fighting at that time. You're going to have some other names, and I'm not disrespecting any of those names. I know that there were coaches that, of course, had their success in the 70s. And, of course, Ernesto Hoos, of course, is starting to campaign as we go into the mid-80s. So I definitely don't want to take away from anything that Hoos has done, because Hoos is definitely the man. Despite the fact that, of course, Rob's got the victories over Ernesto Hoos. But if you just talk about, you know, just the years that you started into this game and the years that you first got international recognition, I really, truly believe that, and again, Hoos was on fire when he came out. He had a lot of big-time wins when he got going in 83. But I would say that Rob Kamen, trips over to America, what he did in Paris, that kind of stuff, whatever, I will credit him as the first big-time name from Holland. I'll credit him as that. That's up to debate. That's debatable, but I will be one of the guys to credit him with that. Looking into it, I've got wins and losses, of course, comes into play. He starts to get his career going at the late 70s. You know, we've got victories here and there. Now, again, he's doing waist-high kickboxing as well, international rules as well, our full contact rules as well. So not only is he doing full Thai, not only is he doing savate here and there because of the trips to Paris, he's doing kickboxing, Dutch style, or what would become K1 style down the road, and he's also doing Muay Thai. He's mixing it all up. So this guy is literally fighting whatever style the kickboxing sport opportunities give him, the kick fighting sport opportunities give him. So I'll go ahead and go down the list of victories. Some of my favorite victories. Goes down to Thailand, of course, gets the KO stoppage over Dinoy, but then he loses to Lockchart and L-A-K-C-H-A-R-T. But the thing that's important is that becomes a rivalry, because he's then, after he loses the decision, he is going to go back. He's going to go back to Thailand, and so he loses that decision to Lockchart in 83. He's going to go back to Thailand in 85, and he's going to stop Lockchart by KO in the fourth round, and then they're going to fight in Japan for the last time. So it's like he won that series, and I think that's important. It's important to have series in the sports, things where you look back on and you say, hey, when I was in a rivalry with this guy, I got the better of him like this many times. So I talked about Peter Arts, and what made him great was after he was great in his prime, he moved on, got older, wasn't able to win a K1 World Grand Prix, but he won three fights in a five-fight series with Semi Schilt, who was the best of his time, in his era. he was able to win three of those fights, or three of five fights, to win that series late in his career. So Lockhart was the first big series that I would say I give Rob Kamen credit for. He's got the victories over John Montoya, who was very successful, American-based fighter who came over from America to Holland and lost by low kicks, and then they did it again in America, and he stopped him with punches in the third round. That means something, because not everything's about just kind of winning in front of your home fans. If there's anybody who has to take their trip on the road, kickboxers have got to do it. So you can't just be staying in your home base. And a lot of guys make a lot of money not ever fighting out of their own country and so on. But you test yourself when you leave the comforts of your own home. When you've got to have your skill overcome encouragement and, the excitement that happens whenever the opposing guy scores on you when you're away, it's a different type of digging deep. You know, we call it the Masato effect. And for those who watched the MMA card last night in Brazil, every time the Brazil guys did any kind of thing, the crowd went nuts, you know, in particular if they thought they were losing. And they were doing what they were supposed to. They were, you know, cheering on their hometown, their countrymen. They were just being good, you know, support for those who grew up where they grew up. So if you can go to those areas and have success, those are big-time wins. So shout out to John McKea for making the trip out to Holland and then losing, and then shout out to Rob Kamen for doing him the honors of going over to America and then fighting there. So definitely victories there. There are a lot of names that come here and there, but the biggest thing I want you to notice this. We've got the biggest first win over Ernesto Hoost came in 1987. Of course, he beat Ernesto Hoost again by big-time KO. I'm trying to remember what year that was. It was 1990. Went ahead and looked it up. Had the loss to Peter Smith. Peter Smith was the first one to knock him out. But after that loss to Peter Smith, he then goes on this streak where he, you know, doesn't lose until he fights like he wins, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So he wins like 9 fights in a row. One no contest that he had with Rick Rufus. But dealing with adversity matters a lot in this game too. And, it comes into play when you look at someone's, you know, history. Another adversity he dealt with, I've talked about the series that he won, the Lockhart series. He lost the series with Kong Pek. Kong Pek was able to get a decision victory over him in France, again, done in a neutral site. And then, of course, these two gentlemen meet again in the Netherlands, and he stops Kong Pek. And then Kong Pek beats him in Thailand, later in that year? Yeah, 2 months later. So that just shows the regularity in which these guys are competing, and he's going against the best in the world, and that series didn't go in his favor. The Rick Rufus series didn't go in his favor. Rick Rufus has got victories over him, got a stoppage victory over him. He wasn't able to get a victory off of Rick Rufus in his prime. But still, late in his career, as we go down the stretch, Jerome Turkan, stoppage, Orlando Beamberg, stoppage, Lavelle Robinson, stoppage. These are all 94, 95. At this period of time, he's been fighting, you know, well into, he started in 78. So now we're talking 94, 95. So we're talking getting into, you know, 15 years into his career as he's kind of winding it down. And one of the most telling things about his career that I like at the very end, and of course, it's debatable. He gets a victory over Alexei Ignashov. Afterwards, I remember he was trying to award Alexei Ignashov the win. He said that he was going to get his stuff together and move over to the States, which he did, and he opened a gym. He's now back in Holland. But I look at his career, I look at what he's done, and I go, you know, and then to beat a young Alexei Ignashov, who would then go on to be a K-1 superstar a couple of years later, that was big. Now, again, I had Ignashov winning that fight, but he got his hands raised, and then he, you know, gave the trophy to Ignashov afterwards because it was just kind of reflecting upon a great career. 97 wins, 12 losses is what I have as far as his Wikipedia record goes. World titles, I mean, you know, ISKA, WKA, IMTF, WKA, I mean, just too much. But the biggest thing that I want you guys to understand about it is we're talking about the first big-time international Dutch kickboxer. I really truly believe that's who he is. And I want to go ahead and say this guy, not only did he have that kind of success adding to all of that is just this really cool, I mean, the best way I can put it is to say, this guy, and a guy who calls his show the Kickfighting Podcast Show, this guy had wins in full rules Muay Thai, full contact, which is, you know, or international rules, depending how it's done, what would be your K-1 style. He fought in K-1. He fought in Thailand. He fought K-2, you know, for those who know that, short-lived K-2. He fought all over the world. You look at his resume and you think, this is what a legend is. So it's not that he's just competing. He's getting big-time wins over international opposition, guys much bigger than him. He was never a big heavyweight. You know, he was a small guy. He's pretty much what would be our cruiserweight division, our light heavyweight division. You know, guys like Adam Watt are bigger than him. Adam Watt's not huge, but they're bigger than him. Mark Russell, Ernesto Hoos grew into a bigger body down the road. But, man, this guy just had a great run. And adding to it, he was known as a signature low kicker, one of the first big-time low kickers in the kickboxing sport. So that stuff shows up. When you look at the resume of somebody, you say, who are they? What did they become? Why are they who they are? Why do you remember them? You remember Rob Kamen as one of the first big international rules, kickbox, international, full rules Muay Thai, K-1 rules, guys out of Holland. You remember him as that, and then you remember him for the low kicks, because this guy decimated guys with low kicks. Just had the technique down, had the hip whip, had the commitment to it. Didn't do a lot of things with, you know, flash. Just sometimes the best guys in the world have the basics down. He could just go out there and beat you with hook low kick or just the speed of his low kick. And he was just chopping guys down all over the place. Rob Kamen, one of the greats of all time and a true legend. So I don't want you guys to be throwing that term away when you want to hear about a guy who really, really deserves it. A guy who fought in Thailand, who fought in K-1. A guy who fought Ernesto Hoos, fought Rick Rufus, fought the best guys of his era in his weight class. Guy who fought all over the world, who went to your hometown, who fought in his hometown, who had big-time wins, who had a couple big-time losses. This guy did it. Rob Kamen, one of the greats of all time. Look him up. Try to find his fights. Don't just try to find his wins. Try to find his fights. So shout out to everybody who's been following the podcast. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the love. God bless, and I will be back on Thursday with another podcast. Peace.